You're listening to The Aaron Carrera Show, and now your host, Aaron Carrera.
Good morning, everybody. Hello, it is me, Aaron Carrera, and if you've been listening all morning to 1-2 Radio, then you just heard me on Backstage Pass with Jay and Raven. Yay! That was very fun. We were talking about my book, Bad Sugar Baby. But if you're just tuning in live now, or if you're listening to the recorded version, well then, hey, 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 welcome. It's me, Aaron Carrera. You're listening to The Aaron Carrera Show, and it is Thursday, June 27th, y'all. Oh my goodness. June 27th, 10:02 a.m. I'm coming at you from Los Angeles, California, where the skies are blue. June gloom is a thing of the past. It is full-on summer. It is an incredibly warm time, especially in my little mid-century modern building that has only window units for air conditioning, which actually I don't love air conditioning, so fine by me. But today we're going to be talking a little bit about fear. It's interesting because I had been thinking the last few days what I wanted to talk about today on the radio show, and I've been going through some fear. I mean, I go through fear every day. I go through a lot of fear all the time. I just don't like to listen to it, and I don't like to be ruled by it. But recently somebody pointed out that there are areas where I am totally in fear and I am ruled by it, and I do like to listen to it, only I don't think that I'm listening to it. And I thought about it long and hard, and I thought, really? Am I really afraid? And I thought, well, of course you are. Fear is not a bad thing. And even the fears that are deeply inlaid in your neurology because of experiences in the past, it's not that it's a bad thing. It's not bad. It's just that the more awareness you have about it, the more you can surrender to your higher power, the more you can choose if you're going to make fear your higher power or love. Because isn't that the maxim we always say? Are you coming from fear or are you coming from love? And sometimes it might be even a combination of both, right? So I, as we were talking about just now on Backstage Pass, I have a novella coming out. It's coming out July 2nd. It's available now for pre-order on Amazon as an ebook, and it will be available as a paperback July 2nd, so that it's a really fun, sort of easy, breezy, sexy beach read of a book. And I'm very proud of it. But the publishers told me that some of the, we sent out advanced reader copies, and they told me that some feedback had come through. And before I saw the feedback, I got really nervous. Like, oh God, what if people hate it? What if it gets all terrible reviews? Oh God, what if it's not good? What if it's awful? And then I went and I looked at the reviews, and the reviews were positive, but it didn't actually make me feel better. I thought, oh, well, these are fellow writers and book lovers and people who are self-selected to be advanced readers. So, you know, I instantly went to like why it wasn't legit, right? Even though, of course, it's legit. Fellow writers, they're going to be, you know, sometimes supportive and sometimes critical. The point is more that I know there will come a day where somebody is going to pull apart this book that's important to me. It's happened to me on every creative project, and I have fear there, but obviously I don't have so much fear that I let it stop me from doing what I'm going to do. So these things have been on my mind, and I thought I would talk today about fear, about all different kinds of fears, about what we can do to work with fear, maybe rather than overcome fear. It's more about, in my opinion, maybe it's even more about working with fear, navigating fear, allowing ourselves the vulnerability that comes with admitting, yes, I have fear, and not judging ourselves as bad people. I feel like there's this notion that if you have fear, you're somehow, you're stupid, or you're wrong, or you're bad, or you're not good enough, or you're not perfect, or you're never going to make it. Like fear has gotten such a bad rap. And yes, because it, in the extreme, it really can hold us back. It really can keep us from looking for love, going for the job we really want, following a dream. But everybody has fear. It's and all kinds of fears. And so if everybody has fear, and everybody not only has fear, but all kinds of fears, how can it be in and of itself wrong? Right? Just like Hamlet says, Shakespeare wrote it via Hamlet, nothing is either good nor bad, only thinking makes it so. So that's what I want to talk about today. A little bit of business first. Hi. Hi, hi, hi. If you like what you're listening to, if you want to come find me, I'm over at onetolisten.com/Erin. That's Erin with an E. And I'm around, y'all. I'm here. If I'm not online, I'll be back shortly. So please, if you want to work with me, feel free to make an appointment or schedule a call back or a chat back or email me and let me know. Like, I'm looking for you, Erin. When are you going to be on? So if I, for example, today, I'm going to be available from 11:15 after this show, if you're listening live, till 1:45. Then I have a Zoom at 2. Then I'll be on again from 3 till probably 7. And if you don't see me on and you need to speak with me, it's not at nighttime. Please reach out, because the truth is, I'm probably just watching an episode of a show with my husband and taking an hour off, and I'd love to come back on and talk with you, right? Don't worry about it. If that and I'm saying this because I know sometimes people are very polite. If tonight doesn't work, we'll find a time tomorrow. I want you to feel free to ask for help. I want you to feel free to reach out and ask for what you need. And if I don't, if I'm not on at that moment, I will find a time to work with you, because it's one of the great joys of my life. And also because I know what it means to be in community. I know how important community is. And community comes in many different forms, right? Community is our friends and our family, but it's also our healthcare professionals. It's also our listening professionals. It's a lot of different aspects. For me, community is everything from the gym that I work out at and some of the friendships I have there. And they're not necessarily friendships like my best friends that I'm gonna have the deepest heart to hearts with, but they're still important to me. They're people who I am investing my life with, right? So I'm saying I know community is important, and I'm honored to be a part of your community if I'm a part of your community. Okay. All right. And of course, the little bit of business about Bad Sugar Baby. Bad Sugar Baby is a novella that I wrote. It is a very slim, easy read, a fun little read. And it is available on ebook and as a paperback starting July 2nd. You can pre-order it now on Amazon, like I mentioned. However, I'm also going to go into the chat room and I'm going to post a link where you can download an ebook version. You can download an advanced reader copy. There are only a couple left. So if they've run out, then they will have run out. But it's only 99 cents as an ebook, and it's only $6.99 as a hard or as a paperback. So it's not an expensive book. Let me know. And if you're in financial trouble, if it's hard for you to afford that, I will send you a copy. I'm not in, of course, I want to make it an income, but I'm more interested in if people want to read this book, I want you to read it. Okay. So it is about a woman who becomes a sugar baby. So, content warning. The book talks about sex work, sex, whether or not sex work is empowering. So it's not a trauma book. It's not trauma porn. Even though very real things happen to these characters, this is a very fun book. So this is going to be way more like if you like Sex in the City, if you like Bridget Jones, if you like Fleabag, you're gonna like Bad Sugar Baby. If you like the girlfriend experience is way more traumatic, more trauma porn. This is fun. This is a fun beach read, and I wanted it to be fun. So come find me, come find my book, and okay, let's talk about fear. Okay, everybody, let's take a nice, long, slow, deep breath in. Ah, and out. I'm just gonna add that there. Everyone, if you want to come tell me about where your fears are right now, I invite you to do so. In the meantime, I just want to talk a little bit about just fear in general, right? Fear is one of those words that's so has so many meanings that it's hard to even parse out, right? It's like it almost becomes, it's not that it becomes meaningless. It's, for example, when we say, well, I want to live an authentic life. Well, what does that even mean anymore, right? All of the catchphrases that people start using that then become like, well, what does that even mean anymore? But fear, of all Shakespeare wrote, of all base passions, fear is the most accursed, right? Fear is the one that we hate the most. I think it's the one we hate the most. And probably all negative emotions can come back to fear. We talk a lot on the Erin Carrera show about when we are triggered, what does that really mean? What's really going on when we're triggered, right? When somebody says something to you like that you don't like, and you go into that reaction, right? You can't even stop yourself. You can't even get calm immediately. You're just in a state where you're like, your brain is now on fire, and you feel like you're living at the edges of your skin, and you want to say no, you're wrong, and deny them, or you want to fight, or you're upset, or you're going to cry, and you can't stop it. When you get triggered, when you go into a negative reaction, what's really happened is basically someone just gave you a gift. Whatever triggered you just gave you a gift to clue you in to the idea, to the fact that your ego had a preconceived notion of the way life is supposed to be, and someone or something or some experience or something you heard or something someone said or did just was the opposite or did not confirm your ego's idea of the way the world is supposed to be. And the ego is its whole purpose is to survive, right? The ego is not always correct. Sometimes it might be right. The ego is not a bad thing. It's here to help us get through life and get through life in certain ways. But when you get triggered like that, someone just showed you where there's a fear. Where there's a fear probably based in the past, right? Based in experiences of the past, things you learned in your past, things people told you and you believed in your past. Now, that's not the only kind of fear. That's not the only reason we have fear. But that is, I think, the kind of fear that we work with most often. So that when someone says things to you like, did you make this decision from fear or love? Do you want to be coming from a position of fear, or do you want to be coming from a position of love? I mean, it makes sense intuitively, right? Right? Like, yeah, I want to come from love. Of course, I want to make decisions from love. And fear gets in the way. It restricts our decisions. It makes us defensive. It makes us, say things we maybe don't want to really say, or say things that maybe later we wish we would have not reacted that way, or wish we would have said something different. And then not only do you feel fear, but then you get frustrated with yourself for feeling fear. You get annoyed with yourself. You get self-critical. You want to push this fear out of the way. And most of us, like I said in the beginning of the show, we act as if there's something wrong with us, or we're dumb, we're bad, we're stupid. How dumb am I to have this fear? Oh my God, I'm so dumb. I've been living from fear for all these years, and I stopped myself from this kind of relationship because I was in fear, right? We really do a number on ourselves, which is how the ego continues to preserve its own life. And I'm asking us to use that ego for our benefit rather than our detriment. I've got a million stories like that, by the way. I've got stories about decisions I made when I was 17 years old that changed the course of my life, probably for the worse. But now, decades later, whenever I feel a little bit of regret, I don't really anymore, but for like 20 years I did, right? For 20 years, oh, I was so hard on myself, and I was so mean to myself for these decisions I made. From the age of 17, like what 17-year-old knows everything about life and can make decisions for their 50 or 40 or 30 or 60 or 70 year old self. They can't. We're all just doing the best with what we've got, right? We're all just doing the best we can with what we've got. But I lived with such fear that I had ruined my life, that I kept going back to this one day, this one moment when I was in my parents' basement and I was 17 years old, deciding which college to go to and why. And I would go back to that day and I could see everything from the hard carpet of the basement, the gray and white and blue hard little bald carpet, and the old sofa there with the wicker, it was a wicker frame and kind of cream and peach cushions on the side, and then the big TV was on the other side of the room. There were sliding glass doors out onto the sloping hill because my parents had a split level house built on a hill. And the piano on the other side of the room, the piano was on the, that would have been the north side of the room. You know, I can go back to that moment. I can remember the moment I made that decision. And for years, I railed against myself for that decision. And only recently have I started going, you know what? Partially because my mother gave me a little bit more information to help me understand where she was coming from and why she was influencing me in a certain way. And also because I remember how deeply I love the people in my life. I've recently gone, actually, Aaron, that was the right choice. Not the right choice for the life you wanted to lead. I was saying lead and live in my life in my head at the same time. Not the right choice for the life you actually wanted to live, but that was the right choice in that moment, and it led to the life that you are living. And right now, I have a lot to be grateful for, and I've done a lot of work, and I know what it's like to live in regret and unrequited love and bad decisions. I know what it's like to recover from insanity and mental illness. I know what it's like to recover from bad relationships, stalker relationships, abusive relationships. And I find so much value. Sorry, I'm going to cry. I find so much value. I'm not sorry. I just am letting you know I might be crying here in a second. So much value in the fact that I know the difference. So much value in the fact that I know the difference between living in that deep of pain and liberating myself. That I'm grateful. Now, of course, would my life be better if I had never had that pain? Yes, perhaps. But because I am paying attention, because I am listening, because I do love myself and my life and you, the people in it, I'm so grateful for everything. And also because I'm old enough to know that nobody lives free of pain. No life is unscathed. No one. And if somebody is unscathed, they're denying some part of their life. Just nobody lives without some kind of sickness or illness or injury or somebody saying something or a breakup or a loss, because everybody dies. Everything passes. Giving birth is painful. Falling and tripping is painful. Allergies are painful. Rashes are painful, right? There's so many different ways we experience pain. Now, are we supposed to avoid pain? Well, pain is a teacher. Pain is a teacher. Fear is a teacher. And so I think that if we can continue to broaden what we're looking at with love, with gratitude, then yeah, we can start to quote unquote move from fear to love, right? When we're feeling fear, in order to move from fear to love, I don't know about you, but whenever I've tried to just push it down or avoid it or ignore the difficult feeling or go do something nice instead, while I am a fan of taking a break when something becomes too much, right? I no longer work out 3 hours a day, maybe once a month, but right? Like that was an addiction I had for a long time, and I gave myself walking pneumonia, never sleeping and working out 3 hours a day, right? So it's the same thing with sleep. If I don't sleep, I get a cold sore, right? If I don't sleep, I get vertigo because I had shingles in my inner ear. It's such a long, dumb story. But anyway, so I know I just can't go without sleep, right? Otherwise, I might. It's a gift. These things were a gift because really sleep is important for your health and also your skin and your well-being and your spiritual channel and your spiritual work, in my opinion. So whenever I've tried to like avoid or deny or hide or shove something under the rug, that's not actually liberating myself out of fear and into love. No. Guess what? Guess what the answer is? I think you know what the answer is. The answer is to go toward the fear, to explore your fear. I don't mean go toward the fear like try to make it worse. I don't mean seek out danger. I mean seek to understand. Ask yourself what's underneath it, right? Sure, some of us might live lives that are more fear-free than others. Like I do think I am a little more fear-free than a lot of folks. Like I don't live with a lot of day-to-day worry. I do, but I don't have like, some people are worry warts, right? Some people just really worry about every single little thing. Trust me, those people are called my in-laws. Those people are called like people in my life, right? Who just have a lot of fear, and I just don't. Partially, that's because I'm too busy. I just do so many different things. I don't have fear. Partially is because when I do think about the things that I worry about, like, oh, I do worry. I do worry if something will bad would happen to my nieces or nephews. I don't want them to suffer bullying. I worry about them getting bullied. Not that they do or are, it's just that's a worry I have because I was bullied as a kid. I know how awful it is. I know the dark road it can put you on. I know how hard it can be once you've got started going down that dark road when you've been bullied to find your way back to believing that you're here on purpose and that there's a value to you, that you are lovable, that you will find people who will love you, that as they say, it does get better. I know that it's gotten more extreme in recent years, and I don't wish that on anybody, but I especially do worry for my nieces and nephews because I hope and pray to God they never go through what I went through with bullying, right? But isn't it so much better if rather than me ignore that fear, if I use that fear? Because I do know how to get out of the idea that there's not a purpose to my life, that I'm not here for a good reason, that I shouldn't be here because nobody likes me, right? Because when I was young, there were periods of time where not nobody, my parents liked me, and I had a couple friends, but I had people be very mean to me for a while. But I know the other side of that story. I know what it's like to have friends who love me so much and I love them, friends who we support each other, we believe in each other. I know what it's like to know that I know I'm supposed to be here right now. Even if the world is n often very disappointing, and I don't mean Earth, I mean more like, society often disappoints me because I don't like cruelty and I don't like meanness. Even though I can be snarky sometimes, I don't like it when people are just mean for no reason. That's hard on me, right? But I can be a part of a solution. I can call my niece and nephew just to say hi or send them a meme, of something they like. Skibbity-doo, right? That's something my nephew says. I can babysit my other little nephew. I can text my niece. I can reach out to people. I can go do something nice for someone to be a part of the solution, right? I can seek to be even a deeper part of the solution through story, through service, through volunteer work, through care, through love, through prayer, through blessing, through metta meditations, right? So I'm asking us, right? Even if we are going to be limited by fear or influenced by fear, and particularly also the fears of the people in our lives, in order to live a full life, I think it's more about understanding our relationship to fear and understanding that our relationship to fear, how we deal with fear, how we interact with fear, is actually often more important than the fear itself. Right? Because fear itself is important. I've been mugged at gunpoint and it taught me something. It taught me a lot of things. It taught me, number one, never go to an ATM after dark, especially alone. Number two, pay attention to your surroundings. If I'm the only woman at an ATM, I don't go to the ATM, I go inside the bank. if I'm the only, unless I absolutely have to, right? I try to go to ATMs where there's a lot of people around. If I'm the only woman in a parking lot, I might try to, I will go out of my way. I would, for example, here in California, in Southern California, if the choice is between me walking a few blocks alone at night in the dark in Hollywood, or me paying $20 for valet, I'm going to, if I'm alone, I'm going to pay $20 for the valet. Now, I don't want to live in fear of walking alone in my own city, but I'm also, and I'm not really afraid of that, I will, but I also have been, mugged at gunpoint. So I know I live in an urban area. I just don't want to take that chance. Is that fear? Sure. Is that awareness? Absolutely. Is that maybe going to keep me from getting mugged again? Sure hope so. Can that keep me alive? Absolutely. Right? Paying attention. But Aaron, you're saying, how do you move towards love when fear is everywhere? Whatever's going on in the world, however we feel about. The other day, somebody went on a tirade about something that happened during COVID relating to Anthony Fauci. And, I've heard a million different tirades about a million different people on a million different sides of the issue. And I have room for all of that. I don't want to judge that person for their experience and their opinion. More so, what I was hearing underneath all of that is the thing that she was afraid of. Now, I am in no way saying we should not hold people accountable or ask questions or do what's right for us. I think you all know me well enough by now to say that, to know that I have a very open mind for all of that. And I hope also for myself. I hope that I hold myself to that same accountability. But what's underneath when we go off on a rant? What's underneath that tirade about the world? Because I go off on them, trust me. If you were my husband, you would know. Right? Underneath, we can explore. We can explore. Oh, okay. Okay, so there's horrible things happening in the world, and it makes me feel that we humans don't deserve the beauty of this. This is me personally, right? When I see horrible things happening in the world, earth and world coming together, I feel, Aaron, my personality feels like, gosh, maybe we humans just really don't deserve the beauty of this earth. Now, it's not that nature is always kind. Trust me, I have seen animals in nature. The other night, I babysat my nephew, and I was driving home at like 11:30, 11:45 p.m. And if you've ever been to Los Angeles, so I was coming from Culver City back to West Hollywood, and I was driving on Jefferson Boulevard, and it curves around at one point as it's shifting from Culver City back to La Cienega. It curves around, and in the curve of the road, I saw a little massive fur ball in the headlights, and as I got close, I pulled, into the other lane, and I realized it was two raccoons wrestling in the middle of the road. And if I hadn't been paying attention, I could have run them both over. And I was thinking, oh my gosh, they're not wrestling for fun. They were in a knockdown, drag out brawl. And if I had had time, if I hadn't been exhausted and wanted to get home, I would have pulled over to the side of the road and maybe even taken a video, which would be weird video of them brawling, but just because I find nature fascinating. I've seen raccoons fight before. I lived in this house in Minneapolis. It was a triplex, and I lived on the second level of the triplex, built on a hill, and it butted up against a nature preserve. If you've ever been to Minneapolis, if you know where Cedar Lake is, I lived on Kenwood Parkway. And behind me was a nature preserve that led to Cedar Lake. So tons of trees and fields, and I would go, I loved it. I could go out the back door, walk down the steps, out to the pathway, and then walk through nature, out to the series of the chain of lakes in Minneapolis and walk for hours and hours. And I would see everything from fox to all kinds of birds and animals and squirrels and chipmunks. Once I heard this terrible screeching and howling and racket, and I went and I opened the back door, and there, on the branch of a tree, of a very, very tall tree that rose up behind my house, like leaning into my porch, were two raccoons fighting with their claws out, like seemingly to the death. And then there was another raccoon up above. And my upstairs neighbor was watching, and he leaned down and he said, from his porch, and he said, "It's two males fighting for a female." And I said, "Wow, they are vicious." He said, "That's right. I'd close your door if I were you." So I know that nature is not always gentle, right? Nature is not a mother nursing its child all the time. But in a way, it also is, right? In a way, it also is. So I have a lot of things that maybe you might say, well, Aaron, it's not fear that makes you worry about humanity. It's disappointment, it's disillusionment, it's anger, it's frustration, it's righteousness. I would say it's kind of all of that. But when it comes to fear, what I seek to do is not hide my head in the sand, but also not let, even though it's important to remember, right? It's important to remember what happened during World War II so that we try to stop it in the future. I don't, you know, as much as we can do on our own, I can't put the onus on myself for trying to prevent a World War III, but I can tell stories and I can act in love and I can vote for people who I think are anti-war or who I think are going to follow my values, whatever your personal values are, and I can honor people working to keep us safe, right? These are all personal things. But I really think it's important for us to really examine our relationship to that fear, right? And to use that to help us shape our lives as best we can. So, you know, my parents, my dad fought in a war. He's a veteran. My husband, he didn't fight in a war, but he was a peacekeeper after a war. And they have a pretty different, they different from me and also different from each other. Opinion about war and the world. And partially that's going to be because, you know, my dad's a Vietnam vet, right? He fought a war that he feels was a hoax. Not a hoax, but me, right? Like the reasons we were there were not the reasons. The reasons we were purported to be there weren't the real reasons we were there, or was really only one tiny reason we were there. And he was treated a certain way with it when he got home. And versus my husband had a very different experience, right? So people are going to respond to their fear in different ways. So my dad, for example, he's more likely to respond with deep sorrow at his fear and worry and concern for his grandchildren and a frustration that all the work that he did as a protester and a marcher for peace, because he wouldn't protest anything. He wouldn't protest against anything, but he would go for peace and he would try to help people. All of the people he's tried to help in his life, he feels like if the world is just going to go back to war, he's sad. He doesn't feel that his life was a waste, but he's sad. Whereas, you know, someone like my husband gets very angry, like, but don't people see? Don't they see the futility of this and the future pain and that the weapons we have are so much worse? He goes to anger. But we can use this wherever you go. We can use this to try to shape a world that is more loving and more kind. And I still believe there's value in that. I, to quote Tori Amos, I still believe in peace, right? So fear. What is fear? Fear. It's really, in a way, it's our inborn technique for staying alive in the face of a threat. That's really what it is. I mean, we're designed, like all living organisms, to protect ourselves from predators. It's totally natural. And there are different types of fear. So, for example, there's the fear of the immediate threat, real or imagined, right? Where our survival is at stake. It doesn't matter, and I know a lot of you know this, it doesn't matter to the body if that fear is real or imagined. The body still takes it as an immediate threat. Then there's another kind of fear, which is anticipatory fear. That's the kind of fear where, like, oh, you have like nervous anxiety and the pit of your stomach just kind of sinks in dread or you get nauseated. It's the kind of fear if you have like a fear of public speaking or leaping off a diving board. That's for me. I have a fear of heights. And whenever I'd have to leap off of a diving board or do a high jump for any reason, I would get terrible, terrible, terrible fear. Fear of performing, fear of meeting somebody, fear of having to go into an important meeting, right? And this kind of fear comes from a couple of different arenas. One of them is fear-based beliefs that come from our history, that come from past. some good, some bad, meaning things we learned along the way that if we took certain actions, that would bring fearful consequences, right? If I, like for me, if I am, I learned that if I was what we used to call chubby back then, I would be rejected. I learned that if I was too smart, I would be rejected. I learned that if I wore Coke bottle glasses, I would be made fun of. I learned, right? All the different things I learned. Now, trust me, at this point in my life, I don't give a shit about Coke bottle glasses or about being too smart or chubby or whatever word we want to use. I mean, I just think that's, I'm old enough to have worked through that. But those feelings do still come up, actually, right? I would be lying to say I don't still sometimes catch myself being self-conscious or catch myself. I catch myself. And the minute I catch myself, I just love that little Erin, that little 5-year-old. She was five, guys, or eight, or 15, however old I was, whenever any of these things happened. She didn't deserve any of that. She was just a little kid, you know? These days, when it comes to that kind of fear, it's important for us to ask ourselves, you know, where in our history is this based? But there's another reason that that anticipatory fear comes around, right? If you're afraid, you have to go in for a meeting with your boss, or, you know, if you're going to go pitch something, or fear of putting yourself out there in a certain way. I really think there's another fear, which is the fear of death. I mean, the fear of death is a real and rational fear. So when we fear aging, partially that is because we live in an ageist society, but also it's a fear of death, right? A fear of losing control, a fear of losing competence, a fear of losing other people in our lives, right? So fear as a response to threat, whether that threat is real or imagined, that is a very visceral experience. It gets triggered by the amygdala. That's the part of the brain that it's at the very base of your skull, right? If you were, if you have hair, like at the base of your hairline, but just up a little bit, right? That's why a lot of times when I used to do massage, when I would work with people, you would all, like if you were working on a part of their body where the tension was related to an emotional fear or an accident or a traumatic experience, I would always make sure that part of the head was supported. Because otherwise, if you're massaging someone, let's say someone had had a car accident and it injured their neck and shoulders. If you're massaging the neck and shoulders without supporting the amygdala feels unprotected. It might be triggered back into that original trauma space. That's a good little trick for any of you working through trauma to hold your hand. You don't have to push hard, just gently press the back of your hand. If, like, here, I'll tell you what I'm doing. So, here at the bottom of my hairline, or where if you don't have hair, where you might have hair, here you can feel if you run your fingers up along either side of the spine, you can feel the bottom of that skull. That's called the occipital ridge. If you think about skeletons, you know how the back of the head is kind of like a little rounded with a little ridge, right? That's called the occipital ridge. I've got my thumb there and I'm cupping the rest of the back of my head there, sort of where the very, very tippy top of the cervical spine inserts into the skull. And there's a lot of muscles that get very, very tense there. And I'm cupping the back of my head there. And just applying gentle pressure, like imagine in that palm, like the pressure that you would feel if you were holding a kitten or a puppy, maybe a little bit more than a kitten, a cat or a dog of maybe 15, 10 to 15 pounds, right? Well, for me, maybe a little lighter. It depends on how strong someone is, right? That's about the amount of pressure. You don't need to push. You're just applying just a little pressure as if you were holding your head, because your head's probably, they say your head, I think they say it's like 10% of your body weight, right? So your head is going to be between 10 and 20 pounds, depending on who you are, right? And how big it is. That will help if you're working through trauma or fear. That will help reassure on a neurological level that you're not in immediate threat, right? Because what happens? The amygdala, which is at the base of the skull, as I just explained, if there is a threat, real or perceived, right? Even if it's not a real threat, but you think it's a threat, that will start triggering a rapid response system in your neurological system to tell your entire body that you're under threat. It releases adrenaline to fire up your sympathetic nervous system, right? Blood will start, your blood will rush to action in various stations, and almost in an instant, you become extremely alert so that you are ready to fight back or you're ready to run as fast as you can away from the problem. And if the fear is overwhelming, if it's even bigger than that, some people, most of us, but depends on how big the fear is, if we can neither fight nor run away, we might move into a freeze state or we might collapse, right? We might collapse and go into that frozen situation. That is part of our animalistic hardwiring. That helps us survive, right? And then there's, of course, there's, right, so that's the fight or flight response, fight, flight, freeze response. And then there is also nurture. It depends on, again, how great the fear is and where you're at. So, for example, when I was being mugged at gunpoint, once I realized I couldn't fight because there was a gun pointed at my head and another gun on the other side, once I realized I couldn't run away because of that gun, I froze. And then I instantly realized what I needed to do. I needed to make the muggers happy. I needed to give them what they wanted. And I decided that if they just tried to haul me off or rape me or something, that I would run away and risk gunshot rather than anything worse, right? But I just decided to comply. I gave them my money, I gave them my phone. I was very nice, right? What was I going to do? And then they said, "Get out of here." And I left. I was so grateful they said, "Get out of here." Right? So let's talk about what to do with fear that we have the ability to explore. Okay? Because something like getting mugged, afterwards you can work through that trauma. But something like the kinds of fears that come from childhood training or belief systems, right? Those things we can work with. That could be anything from being afraid of spiders or, there are people who are afraid of crossing bridges. I have a fear of enclosed spaces, claustrophobia. I have also a slight fear of heights. Not that bad because I try to work through it. So a lot of fears are actually instilled in us since infancy, even from the womb, right? From conception to ambulation, right? At the core, if we think about these different fears, we can really start having more compassion from ourselves. A lot of people fear abandonment. I definitely have that fear. Abandonment, rejection, aging, these are mine. I don't have yet the fear of loss of choice, but I see it in some of my older friends and family members. And I don't have a fear of being lonely, but I know people who do. Fear of losing power, fear of losing their identity, fear of losing a livelihood. I do have that fear. I have a fear of losing my livelihood. There's an infinite number of fears that we could have. And all of these are really meant to protect us, right? That's why when I see myself and others getting so angry at ourselves for being afraid, for having fear, when I see people going into this, like, "Oh my God, I'm sorry, I'm just in fear," or "What an idiot, he's in fear," or, yes, when it's something that holds someone back from something they deeply, deeply want, we can have compassion for how deeply that fear has taken hold of somebody. But also, fear is essentially meant to protect us. And if we remember that, that can help us work through. Oh, this fear, I haven't been going for relationships because I'm afraid of getting broken up with. And I know the fear is trying to protect my future heart. But no matter what happens in any relationship, I know that eventually the hard truth is one or both of us will die before the other, meaning we either will die at the same time or one of us will die before the other. Somebody will lose. So, do I really want to let the fear of loss hold me back from finding a great relationship? Now, maybe, the answer is no. Maybe the answer is yeah for now, because it's too much for me right now. Okay. But we can work with that, right? You can work with that, right? Because it's really, you're supposed to be working with the fear because you're trying to keep yourself safe. But I think you can remember that you also still want these things in life, and it's okay to take your time getting them. It's okay to take your time getting there, right? Working with your fear is just working with information about who you are and what you want, right? So then, if we think about traumatic event fears, some people were attacked by dogs, or I have a bad car accident, so I'm hyper alert even when I'm riding in a car, right? These traumatic events, they take time to work through. Or what about fears like fear of snakes? Fear of snakes or spiders or bugs, that's hardwired into us from generations of people learning that these animals are dangerous. Like, I have a fear, an irrational fear of alligators and crocodiles, but it's not irrational. Those creatures are crazy scary. They will take you and bring you underwater and drown you and then eat you, right? That's what they do. So I think it's totally reasonable to be afraid of crocodiles. That's why you will never find me swimming in the south in a natural body of water if I know there's crocodiles or alligators around. I mean, that's not entirely true. I've gone swimming in the ocean knowing that there are sharks in the ocean, but I try to be very aware. Anyway, right? Okay. Anticipatory fear. If we know that all fear is protective, even anticipatory fear on something that's not real, we know that it's meant to be protective, then we can actually watch ourselves, right? We can watch ourselves when we go into anticipatory fear. Is this anticipatory fear? Is this fear because I'm afraid of repeating something that happened in the past, of a traumatic experience? Is this actually true? Is this new experience going to be another traumatic experience? If I've been hurt in relationships and I'm keeping myself from a new relationship because of past trauma, how do I know the next relationship is going to go bad? How do I know that it's going to bring fear? How do I know that? Is there some way that I can say, even if it does have problems, can I reassure myself that in fact I've learned a lot? I've learned better skills. I have better boundaries. I know I can walk away if I need to. I know I can say, you know what? Let's talk about this to a partner. I don't have to shut a partner down or shut down if there's an issue. I can actually talk through issues. Have you ever noticed a daydream turning an imagination into something distressing? Right? I do that. I actually often have daydreams that turn into like rescue scenarios. Usually I'm rescuing. I know. But like, why do we do that? Why do we let our daydreams turn into distressing situations? Are we like practicing for future events? Are we just used to the news? Are we watching too much CNN? Are we watching too much or whatever you watch, Fox or MSNBC or whatever it is? Have we watched too much 48 Hours and NCIS and Criminal Minds? Or for me, The Sopranos. Are we rehearsing so that we can make plans in case we get in trouble? Because I usually imagine negative scenarios, but then I usually figure out how I overcome them. It's like a weird little, it's like doing a crossword puzzle with my imagination, right? Well, this is kind of intriguing, right? Intriguing that we can maybe not solve the problem of when some bad thing happens, this is what I'll do, because the truth is we don't know. But it is actually important to think about how, planning ahead, right? So when I was recovering from an eating disorder, it was very hard for me to go out with friends because it would be very scary for me to think about what would I eat and what if it was not a safe food. And I learned how to plan ahead. I learned how to share with a trusted friend if I needed to, that I struggled eating enough, but I also didn't want them to necessarily make a big deal out of it. And I learned how to look at menus and plan with a nutritionist at first and then later on my own what I would eat, right? And I learned how to eventually listen to my body and listen to my hunger cues and listen to what I needed in the moment. And all of that took time. That's something we can do for all kinds of things. So it's not that you can know exactly how you're going to feel in any given emotional situation with a potential future partner who might say something that hurts you. But it is that you can practice good communication. It is that you can practice knowing what you stand for, knowing what your deal breakers are, knowing what's important to you. It is that you can practice from the very beginning being honest, that you can practice being kind and compassionate and clear, having good boundaries, right? These are things you can do in anticipation ahead of time. What do we do when our fears cost us too much? When our fears get in the way? When our fears stop us from living life, right? What we can do is we can work with ourselves. We can start by simply acknowledging the fear, hopefully without judgment of self, just observing, simply observing. You know what? I am living in a lot of fear. And sometimes that fear might be hidden. It might be hidden in a need to be right. A need to be right. What's the fear underneath of that? Well, it's a lot of different fears. But generally speaking, though, it's a fear of being wrong, and that wrong leading us to being ostracized or isolated or rejected, or if it comes from a generational fear of being wrong, of not surviving, right? A need to be right. That's a big one in today's day and age, right? A fear of the other. Oh, they don't look like me, or oh, I don't know any person who's of that religious persuasion, or oh, I don't know anyone who's of that political ideology, so they're wrong. I'm asking us to move toward that fear and consider, actually, we have more in common than not, right? Once we acknowledge our fear, we can start to ask ourselves gentle, loving, compassionate questions. Maybe we might seek help. Maybe you might seek therapy, somebody at One to Listen who specializes in working, helping people through their fear. Maybe we might find a book or a YouTube channel. Maybe we might seek medical care. Maybe we might start journaling. Maybe we might pray and meditate. Maybe we might do a ritual with the divine spirit. And we might hand that fear over to the divine. We might surrender our fear to Archangel Michael. We might surrender our fear to Mother Mary. We might surrender our fear to Kuan Yin. We might surrender our fear to Kali, to Pele. We might, right? We might surrender that fear and continuously surrender that fear and ask to be changed. Dear Divine, I acknowledge that I have this fear and it comes in the form of needing to be right and a fear of being wrong. And I hand that over to you. I hand that over to you, Kali. I hand that over to you, Archangel Michael. And I'm willing to change. Change me. Create in me a new heart. Create in me a new way of being. Help me see when I'm in fear and help me find a different way of responding. Help me find a different way of being. Without pressure, without judgment, but in love, right? Right. We can also consider the ways that our fear is holding us back, but it might also be harming us or harming others or keeping other people out, keeping us from the very thing we want, keeping us from, if we are need to be right because we're afraid of being rejected, I'm sure a lot of you know people who have such a need to be right that they become incredibly annoying and frustrating. If we can remember how that fear can actually give us the opposite experience of what we truly want, then we can continue to change our behavior and change our relationship to fear. And while we might never totally lose fear, we can acknowledge that fear is sometimes a gift and fear is sometimes a friend. And we can actually learn how to move from fear to love. All right, friends, we've come to the end of another episode of the Erin Carrera Show. I hope you enjoyed it. I will be back at you next week. We're going to be talking about Bad Sugar Baby because it's going to be available. I'm going to tell you more about the process of it, the process of writing, how it was healing, how the process was healing, and how you can heal yourself through writing. And until then, come find me on 2listen.com/Erin. I love you. Bye-bye.